Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Dan Mintz, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Also joining us on a conversation from IBM is Pete Boyer. Dan, can you tell us a little bit more about the IT strategy at the department? Specifically, could you elaborate on the efforts to align information technology to support the departmental and modal business goals and strategic priorities?
I'd be glad to. And I want to start by saying you have to look at why this is a problem. People tend to jump into answering it. They don't think through why does it happen. And there's a number of complications with it. The first is one of the issues, and it's certainly true at the department, but it's true, I think, a lot of the civilian agencies, is that they to some extent, they're conglomerates of responsibilities. So you have to think through what are, in fact, the broad strategic goals. One of the things that's been very good for us in terms of Secretary Peters is she's defined a relatively small number of strategic goals that we can focus on. If you don't do that, there may not be an obvious theme that you can talk about in terms of the goals. There's often disagreement about that. The second problem that you face is that there's a tendency to be outward focused related to that. We get a lot of demands put on us in terms of initiatives and requirements. And so what happens is the focus tends to get to satisfy that demand as opposed to looking inward. That is, how does that requirement allow us to do our job better? And so you have to change the focus to also look inward a lot more. And the final piece problem is that a lot of times you have to build up to accomplish these goals. So what happens is you may have to do what I call a two-step process, make a series of investments that may or may not have obvious reward in order to achieve the strategic goal. This is a problem, by the way, that's in the private sector also. People want the immediate return, immediate satisfaction. And what happens is with this two-step processes, you have to make an investment, and then the second step is to get the satisfaction. It's very difficult to get that investment to allow you to do that. Having said all that, I'm trying to get to what I call an 80-20 goal. That is that 80% of the time we're doing the right thing collegially, and only 20% of the time is because we have to impose some kind of structure, as opposed to the reverse. Because at the end of the day, if the staff don't take ownership of what the goals are, they're not going to do it. You can't impose it completely from on top. I'm trying to get to that collegial activity. One of the ways we did that is we added a modal CIO to take over ownership of the CIO Council, working with me on that to get more buy-in from the staff across the department. The second is there's always a tension when you have a single agency that's an enormous part of the department. The FAA is approximately 80% of the IT spend of the department. So what I've done and what the FAA CIO and we have done working together is that we focused on the value add proposition. That is, rather than fighting over whose territory is what territory and who has control of what budget, we've identified those areas which would be of mutual benefit to the entire department and help the individual agencies, including the Federal Aviation Administration. And those are the things that we work on. The final thing is one of the recent initiatives that the OMB has wanted us to focus on relates to performance measurements and the performance measurements initiative. I'm not sure that the CIO community and people in general realize how important that is in the long term, because that's a mechanism really for the first time, if done correctly, to start tying a lot of these activities into strategic goals. Because this is now you have the opportunity to do that, because you can see how making these investments can eventually have an impact on results.
It's the cause and effect.
Yes.
Now, not to get too controversial here, but it's been my experience that information technology is an area that's sometimes noted for its turf battles and proprietary views. Could you elaborate on your efforts to foster a more enterprise view that enhances the overall IT governance at the department?
I've mentioned a couple of the activities already. That is, again, the goal you have to get to is how you can get the staff in general to buy into working together. Steve Kelman, who is now a professor at Harvard, wrote a book about how to effectuate change in large organizations focused on particularly the government. And what you find is that you will have some number of change agents that actually want to accomplish the goal that you just articulated You'll have a small group of people who will be interested in these turf battles. And then you have a large number of people who really just want to do their job and swing back and forth. One of the goals you have to do is identify those change agents and then figure out how to empower them and then grow that desire. Because I think you'll find that people do want to accomplish good things. The other challenge, and this is still a work in process, is how do you set up a governance organization and process that allows the touch point for this decision process to happen at the beginning? Because typically what happens is we tend to put it at the end, yes, no. That's far too late. You have to set it up so that as these individual people start doing their planning on their projects, how do you set it up so that it's at that point or close to that point that you start having the dialogue to see how there's value add that will actually make them successful too? We're not there yet. But that, in fact, is one of the top goals I have, as I mentioned earlier, for the rest of this calendar year.
Now, Dan, we understand your department's information technology capital investment portfolio is in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Would you elaborate on how you have strengthened the department's IT capital investment process to assure that investment decisions are mission-aligned and cost-justified? And what role does your DOT CIO Council, which you mentioned earlier, play in establishing a robust, results-oriented investment review process?
Actually, the total IT investment is in the billions of dollars every year.
Okay.
It's really a major component of the departmental work. The CIO Council is critical. Most of the alignment to the individual mission is done at the operating administration, the modal level. So one of the focuses we've had over the last year and a half has been how do we make sure that that process is sufficiently robust and moving in a more robust direction? That is, that they are integrated with the business owners within the operating administrations, supporting the mission correctly. And in fact, we've made a lot of progress in that area. The second step relates to then, now that we have that working, how do we bring it together so that when there are commonalities, that they can be dealt with in a more efficient fashion? We don't do it as well as I would like right now. And that'll be a focus going forward this year.
Now, the e-government initiative is a critical component of the president's management agenda, which seeks to improve and expand services to citizens, businesses, and agencies alike. Would you tell us about your department's efforts in this area and what are some of the challenges faced and what remains to be done?
First, I want to emphasize I'm a very strong supporter of the e-government programs within the federal government. I suspect it's not been a very easy road over the period of years. I know over the year and a half that I've seen it, that it's been often difficult. The kinds of turf battles that you've referenced and things like that have been a problem. We are a center of excellence in the financial area, so we have experience both in terms of being a participant and a provider. The challenges that you have are fundamentally cultural. One problem, it seems, in this city, in Washington these days, being reasonable seems to be perceived as a weakness. So that the problem you have sometimes is you have to be somewhat dictatorial to cause things, which, as I've indicated a number of times, I think is not the most efficient way of doing it, but sometimes is necessary, unfortunately. The second problem you have is people have that darn day job. And therefore, this doing e-government means they have to now be involved in a planning process, working with other agencies, how to work together. It means you add that second step. You make what seemed to be a one-step process into a two-step process. Even though the result might be better, people don't enjoy having to take that second step. The other thing is that there's a lot of learning that had to go on. We are asking people to work together. But the other thing we're asking is government agencies to be service centers. And it takes a while for people to learn how to do that. I think there were some growing pains, but right now I think it's working much, much better. The other thing, it's countercultural. My experience with all organizations, but perhaps it's certainly true in the government too, people have a sense that the bigger their budget and the more span of control they have, the more powerful they are, which in fact is often not the case. But this means giving that up for a greater gain. And that's hard for people to get used to. It makes them question what's the value that they then bring. The other issue that we've had to wrestle with, in fact, OMB has been sensitive to this and we've had some conversations about it, is you have what I'll call a horizontal versus a vertical problem. We're creating what I would call vertical integration. We take all of the issues regarding rulemaking, for example, which is something the Department of Transportation just finished up its transition with, and we make it into a vertical application. At the same time, we've integrated some of these applications horizontally within the department itself. So we have to make two adjustments. First, moving it to another, to the center of excellence. But second, figuring out how do we then make sure that these horizontal integration within the department is still optimized. And we're still learning how to do that together. And I think you're going to see the second wave of e-government will start being more sensitive to that goal.
Now, from a technology perspective, can you tell us about the federal government's migration to Internet Protocol Version 6 or IPv6?
Yes. Tim Schmidt, who's my chief technology officer for the department, has been the co-chair of the IPv6 activity and has been a leading thinker related to it, which has helped the department a lot. For those people who are not familiar with the issue, everything on the internet has an address, just like you have an address for a letter you send in the post office. The internet has grown so much that we're literally running out of addresses, which is an amazing thing. There was a commercial I saw one time where the person got to the end of the internet and then it didn't know what to do. Well, unfortunately, amazingly, we are in danger of getting to the end of the internet. So what this does is, in the same way the number of digits in your address at home, if you make it longer, it gives you more flexibility. We are going to increase the size of the address dramatically in the internet address. So one of the things it's going to do is allows more addresses. And that's important just to survive in the internet. It turns out in the transportation sector, that's a very important thing also for our stakeholders, because what's happening on the internet is we're moving away from just person-to-person connectivity, but person-to-thing and thing-to-thing connectivity. You know, when you have a GPS locator in your car or even a cell phone, you have internet connectivity. And you may have, you know, your car now someday talk to something in your house. So you now have to do thing-to-thing addresses. You may want to manage the car. Their GM announced that they're going to come out with a car that can drive itself in some number of years. So you need all that additional connectivity to allow all those things to address other things. You have some other peripheral benefit related to it. It turns out that by having this longer address, you can build in additional security. And you can also build in some optimization so that the transport of information across the internet becomes more efficient.
Now, along similar lines, new social networking ideas and technologies are redefining the relationships of citizens with their government, both at a federal level and certainly at a local level. So to that end, what is the private virtual world and what are some of the potential business applications that you're identifying?
There's a joke that Don Tapscott, who was one of the co-authors of a book called Wikonomics, says that if you want somebody to understand these concepts, ask them if they remember when a man first stepped on the moon. And if they answer yes, disqualify them. So the private virtual world, anyone under 35 knows exactly what you'd be talking about with a private virtual world because they have an avatar, which is a representation of a person. They've played some game online where they were a person or they were in a second life or they've done one of these things already. People who haven't used it, it's almost like trying to explain the color green to somebody who's colorblind. You have to try it to understand the power. Psychologists have studied the brain response, and it turns out the human brain relates to the human interaction in these virtual worlds in a way very similar to human interaction in the real physical world, which may not be such a good thing, but it's true. We, in fact, have created what I call Dot World, though people are trying to get me to change the name, a very small virtual world. We're almost finished with it. It'll just be a couple of classrooms and an auditorium internally, and we're going to use it for training for employee as an experiment initially, a pilot. We're going to use it for employee orientation, training in general, One of the things that that other people are using these kinds of things for is for emergency situations and emergency simulation. When you do these very large exercises in simulating a potential emergency, the reality is you can't invest in making all the alternatives happen. You can't do that in the real world. Generally, these are set up to be successful. But in fact, emergency training is supposed to teach you how to deal with the situation you don't expect. The question that really is being asked is, what do you do when you don't know what to do? In a virtual world, you can simulate anything. And therefore, you can do, with much less investment, do a much better or more complex or more varied kinds of training. So that's something eventually you want to tag on to when that becomes more robust. The challenges to the government is that and this is a problem with the internet and what we call government 2.0, which is becoming a focus of OMB and the Federal CIO Council, is that it's unpredictable and to some extent uncontrollable. And in fact, that's why you do it, because you're coming up with unpredictably interesting responses and ideas. That's a problem with government because we have policy requirements, we have privacy requirements that are very serious and very important to us. They do not go away. So when you combine an unpredictable environment with the policy requirements, it's a little bit difficult to figure out how to deal with it.
Interesting. What about transportation's cybersecurity efforts? We will ask Dan Mintz, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Transportation, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.